SQL Down Under is a podcast for professionals working in the SQL Server community. SQL Server is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions expressed in the podcast are individual opinions and might not reflect the opinions of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 76 with guest Jakub Szymaszek. Our guest today is Jakub. He's part of the SQL Server product team. And so, welcome.
Welcome. Hi, Greg. Thanks a lot for having me.
So, Jakub, first thing I'll get you to do, like I do with everyone, is just give me some idea of how you come to be in the team and what you're currently working on.
Sure. So I joined Microsoft almost 10 years ago now, and initially I joined the manageability team. So I worked on some SSMS features for a short time, but most of my career at Microsoft has been focused on security. I worked on a number of security features. I'm a PM and the security team that builds security features for SQL Server and Azure SQL Database. I've worked on Active Directory, Azure Active Directory authentication, encryption technologies, primarily always encrypted. On early days, I also worked on internal security logging and monitoring that that we use for service security in Azure SQL Database.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And of course, security is such a big topic right at the moment. In fact, I have a friend who is a professor of cybersecurity in Melbourne, and he was telling me that on their estimates, in the US alone this year, they think there'd be somewhere short of about 300,000 people for working in cyber areas. And so just cybersecurity as a whole becomes super important. But there's a real focus now on security that just wasn't there before.
Yeah. And we also see that among our customers, there is an increased interest, and we see that in adoption numbers for some of our features.
Yeah, awesome. Now, in terms of the security story in SQL Server, a lot of these things have seemed to be in the past sort of regarded as fairly hard. In many ways, security is sort of perceived as a hard thing. Back in SQL Server 2005, we got the first of the real security features, I think, where we started to have column encryption. And the feeling I got, though, is there's a lot of people still haven't even really looked at that. But what did that provide?
Right. So column-level encryption, and actually in our documentation, we try to actually use the term cell-level encryption because that's a little more accurate precise. So that's a technology that allows you to encrypt individual cells in a column. And you can use different keys to encrypt these different cells. So one interesting characteristic of cell-level encryption is that this encryption scheme is not transparent to applications. So applications need to call explicitly a cryptographic APIs exposed by SQL Server, encrypt by key, decrypt by key functions, essentially, to encrypt and decrypt data. So there is no transparency. That's one property of CLE. It is the encryption and decryption happens inside the server. SQL Server performs implements these cryptographic APIs, so data gets encrypted, decrypted inside SQL Server. So that is another difference compared to, for example, always encrypted. I think these are the main things. So CLE is primarily used for example, achieve isolation of tenants in multi-tenant applications, right, where each tenant uses different keys, or to achieve user isolation, where each user, different users, have access to different keys. That I would say is a primary application of CLE. Mm.
Yeah, I actually thought it was surprisingly good, the implementation. I think SQL Server 2005, even though it took so long to appear, like, I think there's people still getting their heads around many of the things that were added in that version. And in the encryption, I was surprised at just how detailed all the coverage was. And so we had support both as well for symmetric keys and asymmetric keys and via certificates and so on, like all of that support was there. But I suppose one of the issues was the location of the key. So in that case, the keys were typically ending up inside SQL Server where the encrypted data was as well.
That's correct. That's why CLE is not meant to be a solution to provide isolation or to protect the confidentiality of the data against some powerful, high-privileged users of the SQL Server environments, such as DBAs or machine admins, because these users, if they want to, they could get access to the keys that CLE uses.
So in the end, the keys typically end up, or the things that are protecting those keys end up in the DP API, the data protection API in the operating system.
That is correct, Greg, yeah, but I'm not absolutely sure about it yet.
Yeah. Typically what I saw is they had sort of like a symmetric key that was protected by, you know, eventually the service master key that was then protected by the data protection API. And it was dependent, of course, upon the service account and how that gets stored. So there's sort of a chain of things on that machine. The one that I did wonder about, though, in that same version, we also got transparent database encryption, and that was the sort of beginnings of that. But in SQL Server 2008, they also added extensible key management. I'm not sure if you got involved in that one or not, but that sort of allowed you to store keys off in an external machine. And I'm just wondering, did you come across, or if you have been involved, did you come across anybody using that much?
Yeah, I haven't been personally involved in EKM development, but yes, EKM is primarily a mechanism to integrate SQL Server with external key management solutions, such as hardware security modules or HSM devices. So yes, we have a number of HSM vendor partners who we work closely with to implement, or we helping them to implement EKM providers for their devices, and we have quite a few customers who use EKM providers for various HSMs, particularly in conjunction with the TDE transparent database encryption.
Yeah, I always thought that was perfect for TDE because it sort of meant that even if you stole the server, if you didn't have the hardware crypto device, you're out of luck, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, but the thing is, my understanding is that could also have been used for the cell level encryption as well. But again, I never saw anybody sort of trying to do that, certainly in amongst my customer base.
Right. To comment on that, Greg, I would have to get back to you or find more information. I'm not sure
I think it'd be incredibly rare, even if it was. So I suppose the thing that we then got in All Was Encrypted then appeared in SQL Server 2016. So that was the first step of being able to sort of separate the keys from the data itself.
That's right. That's correct. So with Always Encrypted, the keys are managed outside of SQL Server. They are managed by applications, so SQL Server doesn't have access to the keys. So that's a primary main difference between Always Encrypted and both TDE and CLE.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And listen, one thing I did mean to mention in the previous thing when I was talking about cell level encryption was just the different algorithms that are available as well. Now, they're pretty much, I think from memory, they were based upon what was available in the crypto API in the operating system. Is that still the case?
Very likely, yes. So basically, whatever, most likely, we just call the APIs the crypto libraries.
Yeah.
Bcrypt that is available in Windows. I'm not absolutely sure whether we implemented some algorithms internally. I highly doubt.
I think anyone ever doing that would be a mistake anyway.
We don't do our crypto typically.
No, indeed. But I think the thing I was sort of coming to with that, though, is it also means that the algorithms that are available tend to change. And that's something I think people need to watch as they're sort of upgrading. Because I know I've had clients, for example, using some of the, you know, the really basic type ones that in later versions of the product weren't supported. And so, you know, it's just an issue if they're upgrading, they had to sort of move to a later version of encryption algorithms. But in terms of Always Encrypted, so what did that bring to the table?
Right. So the unique value proposition of Always Encrypted is that it protects sensitive data from high privileged but unauthorized users of SQL Server and SQL Server environment. For example, database administrators, administrators of machines hosting SQL Server, or if your database happens to be hosted in the cloud, like Azure Cloud and Azure SQL Database, or SQL virtual machines, Always Encrypted also protects data from potentially malicious cloud administrators or any malware that could hypothetically infect the environment hosting your database. So that's the main value proposition.
Yeah. It seemed to mostly appear at the time people started to be using more and more sort of hosting of these things in the cloud-based systems. And you had this sort of concern that people were saying, you know, I just want the keys to stay with me on premises, even though the database is off somewhere else. So that database or the things in the database, actually, that I'm protecting wouldn't be available to someone who's at that hosting organization.
Yes, that's exactly what we observe. We often talk to customers who actually require data to be encrypted in use using Always Encrypted as a kind of a prerequisite for their migration to the cloud. Some customers choose to store the keys outside of Azure, and their application in that case would run also outside of Azure. But I think the majority of customers are comfortable with storing the root keys, which we call master keys, in Azure Key Vault.
Yeah, I was sort of wondering, that's almost sort of interesting because you've really got the keys and the database still in the same cloud provider, but it's a very sort of clean distinction between the two. So where you can use the Key Vault to store secrets, and then those ones could be used in the database application.
Yes, that's correct. So it's about separation of concerns. And also keep in mind that Azure Key Vault offers a couple of options, and one of them involves actually storing the keys in a hardware security module that Azure Key Vault uses as a backend. So that can be an appealing option to those customers who want this extra security layer.
Yeah, what sort of columns are people typically using Always Encrypted with?
Right, so the current version of Always Encrypted that is currently generally available in Azure SQL Database and in the RTM version of SQL Server 2016-2017, we see two dominant applications in terms of the types of columns Always Encrypted is used for. Yep. Number one are columns that store some types of personally identifiable information, specifically social security numbers or national identification numbers for listeners from outside of the US. Yep. Almost each country has this concept or notion of a national identification number.
I wish we did.
Yeah. Oh, you
here
don't?
In Australia. Okay. We had a referendum, like a big public vote. I think it was in the 1980s, and we voted not to have what was going to be called the Australia card, and which we could have used to identify ourselves. And the irony is that ever since then, we spend our whole life trying to identify ourselves to various people and government departments and things. And our sort of tax file numbers and things are not meant to be used for that, but they're becoming this sort of de facto way that they identify people. And I think, yeah, I so wish we actually had a national identity number or something, where I've had colleagues in other countries where they have it, and it just seems so much easier.
Yeah, but I think the other way to describe this category of PII data is the data that typically requires only simple operations to be performed on. For example, point lookup searches. Just find me a person with a specific ID, whether it's social security number or something else. So that's one application. And the second application is on columns that store the data that you would never filter on, or you would never actually do any searching on, basically some large binary blobs, like, for example, documents representing insurance claims or perhaps images containing, you know, sensitive information. So these are two applications, either the data that requires simple functionality in SQL queries, point lookup searches, that's what we support in the current version of Always Encrypted, or information that doesn't require any computations to be performed inside SQL Server.
Now, one of the challenges when you're then, for example, working with a stored procedure or something is, of course, if I'm inserting a row, for example, I'm sending data across to a stored procedure, I need to pass that credit card number or whatever to it in an encrypted form.
That's correct.
Yeah. And so this is where the layer between the application and SQL Server then gets involved.
Right, and that layer is a client driver or a version of the client driver like ODBC, JDBC, or a SQL client in .NET framework, that or the newer versions of these drivers that are always encrypted aware, and they at a high level collaborate with SQL Server to figure out which parameters need to be encrypted, parameters of SQL queries, and how they need to be encrypted, because one key benefit of Always Encrypted compared to CLE, for example, is that Always Encrypted provides transparency of encryption to applications. And what I mean by that is that the application doesn't have to call crypto algorithms explicitly. And that is possible because the information about which columns are encrypted and how they are encrypted is stored in one central place, namely SQL Server metadata.
Yeah.
So how your column is encrypted is part of the metadata of that column, part of the definition of that column. And during the query processing workflow between the client driver and the server, the SQL Server provides that metadata to the driver to inform the driver how the parameters of the query should be encrypted. So all that happens transparently, and you don't have to, as a developer, think about that and call these script routines directly.
And actually, one of the things I really liked with that as well is that with cell level encryption, all you have is basically a var binary max column most of the time at the other end, where this allows you to have the appropriate data type still recorded as part of the metadata.
Exactly. That's a great observation. That's another unique characteristic of Always Encrypted, that it preserves, allows you to preserve the original data types. The other way to think about, you know, encryption is that it's like a new dimension in SQL Server a data type systems, right? You have, let's say, an int column. And after applying Always Encrypted to the column, that column data type becomes encrypted integer, right? So it's an extension of the original data type.
Yeah, rather than just a lump of binary. Yeah, that's awesome. And precisely. So yeah, I really, really like that aspect of it. One of the concerns I had when I first saw it, though, was a performance concern about the round trips. Because again, if I go to call a stored procedure, it's going to have to make one trip just to find out if there are any encrypted columns there. And then when that comes back, then call it again. And so I suppose one of the questions is that cached, or when, how often does that occur? And from memory as well, you've got to enable that on the connection. Otherwise, it would be an overhead that you don't need.
Yes, exactly. So, it's a great question, and you're right. There is a great benefit potentially from caching that metadata that SQL Server provides to the client driver, and we in fact have implemented that caching in some of our drivers, namely in .NET framework. It is implemented already in some other drivers. It is still on our roadmap, but .NET framework, we have implemented that.
Yeah, that's awesome, because that could completely avoid sort of extra round trips, which, you know, is one of the things whenever I'm doing performance tuning, I'm endlessly looking to sort of cut round trips against the server.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Awesome. And so, look, one of the other things, I suppose, then limitation-wise, once it was there, was what you can do with like indexing, lookups, comparisons, things like that. So with the previous version, or the currently shipping version of that, where were we at with that?
Right. So when you asked about earlier, when you asked about current common applications of Always Encrypted, I basically mentioned examples that categories that involve no operations on sensitive data that is protected with Always Encrypted, or operations on data that is that require very few or very basic operations. And the root cause behind it is that today we support, in fact, only one operation on encrypted data, and that is equality comparison. It sounds could be interpreted as something very, very limiting at first, and it is to some extent limiting, but when you realize that equality comparison is used in many, many derived operations, if you will, maybe that's not so limiting, namely always deterministic encryption is leveraged, is used in equality joins, and of course point lookup searches with just equality support. You can do group by operations, so you can still do quite a few things, but the current version does not support, for example, pattern matching using like predicate, or comparisons that involve range queries less than, greater than, or sorting, ordering using the order by clause. So that's the main limitation. We do support indexing on columns encrypted using deterministic encryption. So we've done that. So as long as all your queries do is searching for a specific value, they can take advantage of indexing.
Great. Now, one of the words you slipped in there was deterministic. And so that's what I'll sort of pull you up and ask you, because, of course, to be able to do any sort of point lookups where I say, find me the value and I supply the encrypted value, it has to be a deterministic encryption. Otherwise, that wouldn't work either.
That's correct. That's the property of the current version of Always Encrypted. So if you if you want this basic functionality that relies on equality comparison, you need to make sure that your column is encrypted using deterministic encryption, right?
Actually, maybe I'll get you to just spell out the difference there for people who aren't familiar with that.
Yes, absolutely. So with deterministic encryption, deterministic encryption ensures that when you encrypt the same value let's say, number one or the name Jakub multiple times, you always get the same ciphertext as a result of encrypting that value. Versus with randomized encryption, you always or typically would get a different value each time you call the crypto algorithm, right?
Yep.
And that is, you know, the technical aspect of it or technical reason for it is using a initialization vector, which is in the case of randomized encryption, a random number. In the case of deterministic encryption, that initialization vector is derived from the plain text that you are encrypting. Mm-hmm. So it's always the same.
Yeah. The initialization vector, commonly called SALT.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Hi, this is Greg. Just wanted to thank you for listening to this show and let you know that if you'd like to let me teach you more about SQL Server, we now have both free courses and low-cost courses available online and on demand. The courses include detailed hands-on lab work for you to complete to reinforce your learning, and there are more courses coming in the next few months. You'll find details at training.sqldownunder.com.
Now, one of the things that was a challenge, like when we were creating the Wide World Importer samples for SQL Server 2016, I had to demonstrate all was encrypted. And the challenge at the time was that SQL Server Management Studio really couldn't deal with that. And so the only way we could sort of demonstrate it, and if you look in the samples, we had to actually build a custom application to be able to really make use of it and show it in action. But you improved that, even though there was nothing else in 2017 for this, you sort of improved the tooling there.
Yes, that's right. So we solved this problem, or I addressed this problem by introducing a feature called parameterization of always encrypted in SQL mm-hmm. Server Management Studio. So what this feature does, so let me actually get back for a moment to what we discussed earlier, which mm-hmm. was a certain important property of an always encrypted enable client driver, mm-hmm. Namely the fact that the client driver intercepts queries and transparently encrypts parameters, query parameters that correspond to encrypted columns. Mm-hmm. So now in SQL Server Management Studio, we don't have a notion of query parameters per se, but we have a notion of transact SQL or T-SQL variables. Mm-hmm. So what this feature parameterization for always encrypted achieves, or what it does, it basically translates or converts transact SQL variables into the proper driver level parameter objects, SQL Server Management Studio, as some of our listeners may know, is basically a .NET framework application. Mm-hmm. So it uses SQL client as a SQL driver. And in this case, parameterization involves translating and converting T-SQL variables that you declare in your query window in SSMS into SQL parameter objects of .NET framework. In that way, the queries that you author in a query window become parameterized queries that a SQL client driver can now process and can do this transparent encryption of parameters for you.
Now that's awesome. And from memory, in the query options, I think in the advanced area there now, there was an enable parameterization for always encrypted added into that as a query option as well.
That's right. So you can enable parameterization individually for particular query windows mm-hmm. in query properties, or you can enable it for all future query windows in the tools option, tools menu, if I remember correctly. You also are asked if you connect to your database with always encrypted enable in the connection from SSMS for the first time. You will be asked if you want to enable parameterization.
Yes, I've seen that pop up come up. Yeah, that's the one. Now, listen, the other thing in SQL Server 2016, though, which I should just mention along the way to keep the differences clear, we also got data masking in that version.
That's correct.
And so, but aimed at a very different thing.
Yeah, it is completely different thing. So data masking is more of application developers feature, really, that allows developers to basically decide which data should be obfuscated by SQL Server before that data is returned to an application. So the dynamic data masking allows developers or data owners to decide which data should be masked, and that can be done in one central place, namely in a SQL Server database, and it applies to all applications that query that data.
So, for example, I could have a credit card mask that says, when you query the data, I'm only showing you the last four digits or something like that.
That's exactly correct, yes. Yeah.
Now, one of the things to be aware of, though, in 2016 also was, and probably still today, you couldn't have data masking and always encrypted on the same column. And I thought that was one of the little things that I was sort of disappointed to see. I understand it'd be a real challenge, though. But I think what you'd have to have is like a default data mask for the data type, because the system would know the data type. But yeah, I could see challenges there.
Yeah, so this is challenging with at least the current technology, the current shipping version of Always Encrypted, because as we said earlier, with the current version of Always Encrypted, SQL Server is very limited in terms of what it can do with the data. And if you think about how data masking, dynamic data masking is implemented, what SQL Server needs to do to mask the data, you realize that SQL Server basically needs to get the plaintext value and figure out how to mask it based on the masking rules defined for the table. But if a column is encrypted, SQL Server does not have access to the plaintext data. So that's why these technologies today, at least in the current version of Always Encrypted and Dynamic Data Masking, are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. I always thought it'd be nice to have both, because I thought anything I protect from my own employees with like data masking, I'd probably want to protect from a hosting company as well. But look, another question actually off the top of my head, and I don't know the answer, I don't know if you will either, but do you know if these things work with alias data types as well? Like we were talking about an int, but I'm saying if I created a credit card data type, whether that sort of works with that as well.
Always Encrypted does not support alias data types. I'm not sure about dynamic data masking.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out. Because I was thinking it'd be kind of cool if you could create a credit card data type or an email address data type or something, and then be able to have a default mask for that data type or something. But anyway, that's dreaming. And so that's okay. And so look, that brings us to SQL Server 2019 coming up, which we had CTP 2.4 released yesterday, and so getting closer. And so what do we now have in this version to enhance Always Encrypted?
Right. So for the last 3 years since we shipped the initial version of Always Encrypted, we've been working hard on a major enhancement to the feature that leverages technologies called secure enclaves. So Perhaps we should start with explaining what these secure enclaves are, right?
Yeah, right, I know, so it's the formal name. I know when they were discussing the name, I was one of the ones going, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that seems to happen is every time somebody says secure enclaves, they then explain what it means.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely requires some explanation.
Yeah.
I guess the simplest way to define what a secure enclave is to say that it's a isolated region of memory. Okay, so it's a region of memory that has some special properties, and these properties make this region of memory essentially inaccessible, and they make the content of this region of memory invisible to the outside world. And yeah, that outside world includes even a process that contains a secure enclave. So even that process cannot see what's inside.
And this is enforced by the processor, because this was like an Intel thing or something when it first appeared.
Right, so there are actually many different ways to implement that concept of a secure enclave, or at least there are two main approaches. One approach is, as you mentioned, through using special hardware or secure hardware. Intel Software Guard Extension, or SGX, is one example of such a technology. Mm-hmm. And in this case, yes, the processor equipped with SGX enforces this isolation of the enclave. There is, however, another approach based on software. An example of that is supported in Windows, a technology called virtualization-based security. So virtualization-based security enclaves, or VBS enclaves, are enclaves for which isolation is enforced by hypervisor, the same hypervisor that protects, ensures the isolation of virtual machines. It also protects or isolates enclaves, basically ensuring that if any process on the machine tries to access the memory of the enclave, such attempts to will be rejected and result in a failure. Before talking about attestation, it might be good to explain how are we using these enclaves in SQL Server, and what we run inside those enclaves. So secure enclaves is a generic technology. You could write any application that uses enclaves. But specifically what we did in SQL Server, we basically extracted a small piece of functionality of SQL Server, and we packaged it as a DLL, and we put it inside this enclave. And that DLL contains the following two critical pieces of functionality. First, it implements certain predicates that are commonly used in SQL queries on sensitive data. That includes like predicates and various comparison operators. Mm-hmm. So now SQL Server can delegate the evaluation of those predicates to the enclave. And the enclave decrypts the operands, arguments of such operators or such operations, and perform operations on plaintext and returns partial result to the SQL Server process. And so that's one.
The thing that we're saying, though, is that previously to be able to do operations on the encrypted data at the SQL Server end, you needed the key, but we didn't want to send the key there previously. But that's now right. With the secure enclave, we have a place we can send it to where nothing else can get to it, which then lets you do operations that involve the key on the data.
That's exactly correct. So as you articulated it very well, that before our only secure way to support computations unencrypted data was by using algorithms, specifically deterministic encryption, which is an example of a property preserving encryption scheme that preserves equality, as we explained. So that allows SQL Server to perform certain computations on data without decrypting it at all.
Yeah.
But that's very limiting, as we discussed. So with enclaves, we can apply a different approach. With the enclaves, the client driver can supply the enclave with a key or keys that are needed for processing predicates in a SQL query, operations triggered by a SQL query. And the enclave can decrypt the data that is stored in SQL Server or supplied by the client as arguments of a query and perform operations on plaintext. So we're not limited anymore by properties or characteristics of crypto algorithms. And in fact, we can use the strong randomized encryption and enclaves work with
just
data
fine.
That are encrypted using randomized encryption. Exactly.
And so there'd be many operations which, if you didn't have this, would just be too slow, right? So I'm thinking things that involve large numbers of rows would have to all be sent back to the client to be able to do things, where now you could do processing right across large numbers of rows where you've got access to the key.
Absolutely, and that's the right way to think about it, the main benefit of always encrypted with secure enclaves. Exactly. Before, the only alternative, let's say with the current version of always encrypted in 2016-17, the only option if you wanted to perform richer computations on encrypted data like pattern matching would be to download all the data set or do maybe some complex pre-filtering using some other columns that are not encrypted perhaps, but still would have to probably download a lot of data and do data processing on the application side. And that would come at the expense of making changes in your application, of course. And with enclaves, all that processing can happen in place inside SQL Server. So that's the main value proposition.
And that's great, because I presume that means you could do like large aggregates or something right across the encrypted data. And it all could be done in SQL Server.
That's right. Although today in the at least the current preview version of SQL Server 2019, we do not support aggregate functions.
Aggregates, okay.
Like sum or averages are not supported. But the point I'd like to make is that with the previous version of Always Encrypted that used deterministic encryption, equality comparison was everything we could ever possibly do, right?
Yeah.
Now, with enclaves in the initial version, we will support a few operations, pattern matching, range queries. However, this architecture that leverages enclaves in general has a future in terms we can easily build on top of it to add more operations and more functionality in the future. And we'll do that based on customer demand and the feedback we're hearing from customers.
So then that's awesome that we have that, but then we have the situation where the client needs to trust the enclave.
Right, and that brings us to the attestation.
The attestation service,
Service, exactly. So yes, the issue here is that at some point, the client driver receives a query from the application and submits this query to SQL Server for parsing and analysis, exactly as in the previous version of Always Encrypted. SQL Server parses the query, and at some point it concludes, okay, to process this query, I will need to leverage the enclave. And SQL Server informs, goes back with the result of this analysis to the client driver. So the client driver now knows that in order for the query to be processed, the enclave will be, the use of the enclave will be required. And at this point, eventually the client driver needs to send the keys and submit the query for execution, needs to send the keys to the enclave. But before the client driver can do that, it needs to actually verify that this enclave is really trustworthy. It's not, for example, some kind of a simulator or something that pretends to be a secure enclave, but
yeah,
it is.
Just to capture the keys, yeah.
Precisely. So that issue is solved, addressed by implementing an enclave attestation workflow or protocol, which involves the use of an external service, a service that is different from SQL Server. And that attestation service's job is to verify, validate that the enclave is secure and trustworthy. Now, the details of this attestation protocol vary depending on what is the enclave technology that we use. It's different for SGX enclaves. It's different for VBS enclaves.
Actually, one other question that I didn't mention before too is there a Linux story for this?
Right. So in SQL Server 2019, this technology, always introduced secure enclaves, will be supported on Windows only. Support for Linux is definitely on our roadmap. However, as you can imagine, the Linux support will not be possible with VBS enclaves, which are Windows-specific technology.
Yep.
The cross-platform or cross-operating system enclave technology that we'll be investing in is Intel SGX. So that's what will be supported, awesome. What we plan to support eventually on Linux.
That's great. And so, and as we mentioned earlier, the tooling's been updated, I noticed, substantially. So we have the ability to do all the work with like column master keys and column encryption keys and things directly inside Management Studio.
That is correct. As far as key management, provisioning keys, for example, there is only a relatively small change, which basically is about allowing you or a user in general to designate a column master key as an enclave enabled column master key. So we use this setting. This setting is essentially a knob that allows you to enable secure enclaves for a part of your schema. So the idea is that if you want enclave based functionality for your column, you go and provision an enclave enabled column master key. So that's a column master key that has the allow enclave computations property or bit set to one or true in the metadata for that key in SQL Server. And then what this means that any column encryption key that is protected with the master key will be permitted to be used in enclave computations. And by inheritance, if you will, or by relationship, any column that is encrypted with such column encryption keys protected with enclave-enabled master keys will support enclave computations.
Well, Jakob, I think that pretty much bringing us up to time, but again, it looks like a substantial amount of work has gone into the 2019 version of this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been, as I said, it's been a long journey for us. But we believe we bring a lot of value to customers. We talked in details in terms of we talk uh, uh, we we explain one benefit, which is bringing richer computations to the always encrypted world and customers using always encrypted. One other benefit I want to quickly mention, another issue that many customers currently struggle with is the problem of, you know, encrypting data for the first time or rotating column encryption keys. With the current version, again, the only option for customers is you use tools like SSMS or PowerShell, which download all the data, re-encrypt it on the client machine, upload it back. So with enclaves, another benefit in addition to rich queries is that we now support such operations, cryptographic operations on the data in place inside the enclave. Not only that, you can trigger such operations using, you know, traditional old-fashioned alter table statement. In other words, through T-SQL. So that's a new thing. You could not do that before.
Yeah, that's awesome, actually, because cycling keys is important, yet cycling keys in the current version would, for large amounts of data, would probably, in many situations, be impossible because all the data would have to go to the client and back again.
Absolutely. It is impossible or very impractical and challenging. You know, if you have a table with a terabyte of data, it can easily take a couple of days to do that. And this process is very prone to any network errors. Although we have invested in some tooling like online encryption or near online encryption in PowerShell, this is still a challenging operation without an ability to encrypt data in place on the server side, which is what we are enabling now.
Actually, one question I do have then too is supported versions of Windows and things. Obviously we'll need SQL Server 2019 to do this, but what about Windows?
Right, so the question about, you asking about the Windows client.
Yeah, well, for example, for the host attestation service, I think there was a version of that appeared in Windows Server 2016, but I think my recollection was we talked about this at some stage, and yeah, I think it needs to be Windows Server 2019, does it?
Right. So the operating system requirements currently for the current CTP, at least, are that to enable attestation and virtualization-based security enclave, SQL Server must be running either on a Windows server or a Windows 10 Enterprise, the new version 1809, if I'm not mistaken, which is the counterpart, client-side counterpart of Windows Server 2019. So that's the current state. We are working with our partners in Windows to see if we can expand the list of additions of Windows that support this combination of technologies, attestation and VB's enclaves. So we hoping that we can address some of these limitations in the future.
Great. And look, for people to get started with this, you have a wonderful tutorial already up. And so if people look for the Always Encrypted with Secure Enclaves, there's a tutorial or walkthrough there that sort of shows you how to configure it all. And yeah, I quite happily did that. I had a Windows 10 machine with Hyper-V, and I just spun up Windows Server 2019 machines, put the latest CTP on, and yeah, it all worked just fine.
Yeah, that's right. We have a tutorial, aka.ms/always-encrypted-enclave-tutorial. As you said, all you need to get started are, in fact, two machines, one for SQL Server and one for the attestation service. That's a required minimal configuration.
Awesome. Well, look, thank you so very much for your time today, Jakub.
Thank you so much, Greg. Thanks for having me, and thank you for all your support for us.
Awesome. Thank you.